This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 73, 3D Printing.
Hello and welcome yet again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, one of your co-hosts. I'm coming to you from a dark corner of my house here in Budapest because my normal recording location is occupied. So I had to find a new place.
Co-opted.
So Michael, over to you in what I hope is sunny North Carolina.
It is sunny, frigid North Carolina. The high today is supposed to get around 27 Fahrenheit.
Ooh.
Yes, so below freezing all the way around. It was like 13 degrees this morning when I grabbed coffee. And today is Friday, January 24th, and we're going to have a kind of a fun, goofy show today. And wanted to start really about something I think I talked about recently, because I know
last week we saw
a tweet from our good buddy Ian. On this ePred, just want to talk a little bit about my experiences over the last week playing with my new 3D printer. And you say, how is that related to gaming?
Well,
How is that related? Well, there are two ways. One, one of the things I plan on doing with the printer is I had been working on a real-time strategy game in my copious free time, and I realized that the best way to test out the thoughts and algorithms behind it was to create a board game. And so I did that. We did a playthrough. Gosh, it's been over a year, I think, now. And I decided maybe I should just create a board game instead. It might be easier. It might be fun. And if you have a board game, you need pieces. And a 3D printer is a great way to print pieces. And I have three different colors, and I have three different races in the game. So I can print out pieces for my board game with it. So that's one gaming angle. And then the second one is...
That works.
Yes, it works. And then the second one is I have been playing around with a open source project called the WoW Model Viewer Project.
And ooh, I think I've heard of that.
Yes, and what this does is it actually goes into the World of Warcraft locally installed files and pulls out the 3D models and allows you to assemble them into a exportable 3D model and then do stuff with it. Well, and what I've done is I've actually printed out one of my characters from World of Warcraft with this printer.
And how'd that go? Was it good?
It's actually not bad. I was surprised. It took me a lot of learning on, you know, how to, you know, when to use a raft. And I'll explain all these terms in a second. What scaffolding to use, etc. when printing. How large or small to do it. How to remove the raft and scaffolding when the printing is done. All kinds of things in order to make the... printed 3D model as stable as possible. And so four years ago, there was a company that would charge you $100 and they would print your character from World of Warcraft. This has got to be how they did it. And I mean that from a concept perspective, not an actual perspective, because they printed it in color. And of course, with the 3D printer that I have, you can print one filament at a time, and the filaments are in colors, and so you end up having, monochromatic 3D models. But very, very cool stuff. And I'm having a total blast with this. And I'll definitely put a couple of prints on the webpage for our listeners to take a look at and provide feedback on. But so have you gotten the 3D printing bug yet, Michael?
Well, you know, I think it's hard not to. Ian's been such a forward thinker in this space for a long time. We've had him on the show. We've talked about it. He's the expert and knows about this. And so I've been following what he's been seeing. And I've been watching closely a few other interesting elements in the space. And one of the ones that you kind of triggered my memory on with the World of Warcraft idea was this item called Twinkind. So TWINKIND.com.
It's not Twinkind?
No, it's Twinkind or maybe it's Twinkind. It's German, right?
It's the German, guys are German.
It could be Twinkind. You know, it's like a mini me.
Yes,
you know.
Literally. it is literally like mini me.
Yeah. So I mean, have a look at these guys here. There were some interesting articles
and
in Wired and a few other places. But it's fantastic. You know, the duplication of you in miniature, and then being able to have a little you that you could then put in various spots and places, looking extremely realistic, and you could take photos of you doing something that would otherwise be impossible, and then people would say, "How did you take that picture?" And you say, "Well, you know,
green screen.
It's only a model.
It's green screen."
So I really do think that 3D printing, and it's funny that we're talking about this because I had a conversation about this earlier today at work. 3D printing has come an awful long way and is going to be an extremely disruptive force in supply chains.
Absolutely.
Your supply chain, you know, involves an awful lot of things like, you know, moving atoms around the world. And when 3D printing gets to the point, which I think we all know it can get to, and Ian has, like I said, been a forward thinker in this space, you're now in a position where you really don't need to move atoms so much, because if you have the raw materials close enough by, you take your MakerBot or other printer and you replicate what it is that you want based upon a design that somebody somewhere else in the world created. And this is not a new thing either. The thing that strikes me is when you consider that people in a submarine, if a part breaks and they don't have a spare handy, they have to make one, because when you're at the bottom of the ocean and you need to make sure that your boat is going to go, you don't have many options.
Right. And they did milling for most of that stuff. I know the Navy for years and years and years has had, you know, 3D milling of parts too, not just in subs, but also on, you know, battleships and aircraft carriers, et cetera. Because, you know, you don't want to carry around all the spare parts for everything, but you're right. If you're at 1500 miles to 2000 miles away from the nearest anything, and there's a leak, you probably want to fix it now.
just a little bit. You're kind of motivated.
You're motivated.
So I think it's really very interesting along these lines. And so coupling the whole story to games at work, it would be ways that you could very quickly create the things that you need that would help you with your play, which would help you with your process generation, creation, creativity, and apply what you need to do faster than ever before, because you're not waiting on things to be shipped to you.
Well, we've talked a lot about how gaming is used to drive, you know, innovative solutions to things, right? You know, whether it's game storming or other things. But there's a great video from the guys at MakerBot working with some of the scientists working with NASA for the James Webb Space Telescope, I believe. Talking about how they leverage 3D printing to machine many, many, many of the parts during the design phase of the telescope, and got to the point where they only went to the machine shop to actually build the component for the final component. And it used to be, you know, you would work on a part in 3D CAD software modeling, et cetera,
send it to the machine shop.
They would, you know, spend time actually milling a prototype, turning that back to you, and then you would tweak it and go back and forth and back and forth. And that's a very expensive time-consuming activity. Well, when you can sit there and do your designs in a level of technology and fidelity that you can actually test it out to the actual spec other than the material itself, that's really cool. And by the way, at CES a couple of weeks ago, I was talking with one company that is a group of chemical engineers who have created a startup, and what they do is they will build custom engineered filament for your MakerBot or other 3D printer so that you can get even closer to final finished goods coming out of a commercial desktop 3D printer. Amazing stuff. So, and put the link in the show notes for that company.
So it's really material science sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So the filament would impart certain physical properties to the end result printed thing.
Well, right, yes. Now, you know, the picture that we have with this show post is a dragon that I have. I've got this. It's a heavy stone dragon design that I used a 3D digitizer to scan it in and then print it back out on the MakerBot. It took about 7 hours to print, and it weighs...
Whoa, 7 hours?
7 hours to print, and it weighs only... I think the actual statue is about 1.5-2 pounds in weight. And
wow.
The MakerBot 3D printed one is, I think it's like 0.2 pounds. So, you know, order of magnitude lighter, right? And that's because by default, even at a high resolution print, you're only going to get about a 10% density. And mm-hmm. So within Maker, within their printing software, you can say, change the density, push it up to 20%, 30%. And of course, each level that you increase the density is going to consume more filament and take longer to print. So one of the experiments, back to games, that I plan on doing over the next couple of weeks is to actually design from scratch some dice. You know, we have a little sound effect that we do at the end of our shows of some dice rolling. Michael, that you actually rolled those dice, so they're real. And you can tell there's a certain heft, there's a certain weight, there's a certain density to those objects. So my goal is to actually print at maybe 80 to 90% density with the MakerBot and see how long it takes to create. Probably the first one I'll do is a four-sided dice, so basically a little pyramid.
Right.
And see what that takes to actually print that out.
Wow. That will be something else. We'll be ready to do Ocean's 14, I suppose, right?
You know, exactly.
For that. Mean,
so you think about that, but it does kind of change the basic dynamic of the things you can do to build your own game and to improve a process, right? Because you're absolutely right that you could actually create not just virtual spaces and conceptual game storming activities, but actual the physical things that you need with that to help push the game forward to come up with new processes or new ideas, etc.
So, you know, thinking about how, again, applying games and taking this technology and connecting it to work, imagine a not too distant future. Imagine a world. Where you could take your phone and your camera on your phone,
yes,
and use that as your digitizer and say, hey, I would like to replicate this flower. I would like to design a shirt with this capability.
There are multiple apps that you and I have played with on the iPhone that will create 3D renderings of physical things on the camera, right? Now, I don't know what the format is, and can I take that format, export it from my phone, and actually pull it into like a MakerBot? But, I mean, even something as simple as there was an app last year that we played with for you want new glasses. So you take the app and you take a couple of pictures of your face, and now you can put glasses on your face with the full three-dimensional aspects of, you know, size and positioning on the nose and where the bridge is and everything else. So you can render a level of fidelity of a 3D object. The question is, how deep is that fidelity? That was the, so yeah, another quick thing. That was the thing that surprised me. The level of fidelity of the models coming out of the World of Warcraft model viewer was much lower than I was expecting. There is so going on with the mesh compared to, so the mesh is the actual physical shape, and then the graphic overlay that they do that gives it a much deeper, a much richer fidelity than the model actually is.
Yeah, right, right. And I think once the output is extruded, printed, assembled, et cetera, you know, we're looking at the early stages here. At some point, you can imagine where your phone could very well be the replicating device itself, you know, that it's almost like a Polaroid that now creates for you something that you were just taking the picture of.
All I know, if my phone starts extruding stuff out of the bottom while I'm on a call, I'm hanging up.
Well, it could depend on what it is, I suppose. Solid gold.
But speaking of phones.
Yes.
You had found the most incredible gaming phone device ever in the world.
Oh, I absolutely did. what I loved about this, and I have to give credit where credit should be due, or maybe not.
Or is that blame?
I was listening to most recent episode of Mac Break Weekly, and there was some conversation going on about, you know, hey, the people on the panel all have children. I do as well. Their children have smartphones. Mine are not all yet in that category. The 8-year-old doesn't necessarily have to have a smartphone. And what I took away from that was in punishment.
Yes.
These dads would say, well, I'm going to take away your phone. And the kids are smart enough to know, it's like, well, dad, you really need me to have my phone so you can reach me.
Yes.
So you really don't want to take away my phone now, do you? And the dad would go, trapped.
Trapped again. Well, curses. Foiled.
Curses. Well, so the parry counter to the, oh, you dad, do you want to take away my phone? Is, yes, I do. I'm going to take it away, put the SIM card in another phone and give that to you. And what you could be given would be the brick phone.
Yes.
And these phones are like
awesome.
I mean, what's the model here? It's like a old Motorola.
One of the original. It's not the original, because the originals had like a, you know,
they were gray,
4 or 5 centimeter back on it, right?
Yeah.
But
these
are
pretty big.
It's pretty close.
Pretty big. And, you know, they've got like a 40-day standby battery, 40-day like standby battery. And they have a game on them, so it fits for the show. The game on them is Snake.
Oh, that's pretty complex.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the Nimblebits guys, remember?
Except it's like, you know, 2-bit instead of 8-bit.
That's right. 2-bit game.
2-bit gaming. And it's a phone, and actually, you know, you can dial people with it, and you can receive calls too. And, you know, it's pretty good. So you've got a game, you've got a phone, it has a clock that's built into it. It's got amazing battery life. And, and you know, if you're a kid, everyone will be asking you, hey, how did you get that phone?
Where can I get one of those? All the way back from 1991, before most kids were born. Actually, before all current kids are born.
And they say they you can buy them now. If I click on buy now, we go to shopmeetthebrick.com.
Well, in the U.S., you can buy only the brick. The power edition is UK and EU, and the home edition is coming soon.
Yeah.
Yes.
So for $70, you know, this would be great.
Yeah, I think you should buy two.
Oh, and there's a torch, right? So for those who speak American, a flashlight that you can use as well. How great is this? And I've had this problem, right? Michael, you may have as well, is that if you're walking along, you're holding your cell phone in your hand and you're trying to put it like between your shoulder and your ear, it doesn't work very well, does it?
No, it's too small, thin, and convenient.
Yeah.
Yeah, this.
So you just can't. You can't do that.
This is awesome, and it's taking the retro thought back. You know, everything you know, old is new again. Now this is this is just old
with current technology.
Yes, yeah, it does have Bluetooth. Didn't have Bluetooth in 91, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so. So imagine if you could do the bag phone version instead. So you might have like a 6 month standby battery life if you just had the bag attached to it.
No, it would be even better. Instead of doing like the regular bag, you could do a fanny
extended
pack
bag
version. You'd have a fanny pack with the battery in it. and for those who have no idea what a fanny pack is, we'll
consider yourself lucky.
We'll put a link in the show notes.
I hope you don't have a picture of yourself with one.
There probably is
probably
a picture,
not.
But not one that I will share. They were hip at one time. Were they?
To be square, maybe. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, Huey Lewis in the news. So, very, very cool. I think everybody should have a fanny pack stored somewhere in their house, in an attic or basement, hidden away behind lots of boxes.
So, you know, maybe the last thing to be thinking about here, and I've still given a lot of thought to this, is the wearables. And I've been, you know, looking at a number of the wearables that have been sitting in CES, and not just the watches, and not just the concept of the phrase I've used before is mobile does not equal your thumb, right? You know, it doesn't necessarily mean you're pulling out a tablet or a smartphone and that is your mobile device. That wearable computing, interfaces around wearable computing are all going to be really, really intriguing as they come together. And this year, CES was certainly the year of the wearable.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, the watch, there's a great link I'll try to find that I saw earlier this week of what an iWatch could actually look like. There were so many companies at CES showing off kind of the next generation of Android-based watch concepts. Think of the Pebble, except two generations from now, with lots of linkage between, you know, a wrist and your smartphone, newer capabilities on the wrist, etc. There were updates that companies like Y-Things were showing. You've got wearables. If you consider the GoPro, a wearable camera, there's some great stuff that they were showing. Really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, one of the ones that came across my radar was the Misfit wearable called the Shine. And, you know, this
not the
is
Shining,
very much
just the Shine.
The Shine. Okay. You know, a small device the size of a couple of quarters off, you know, made off of out of milled aluminum. That you could wear as a watch, you could clip it onto your lapel, you know, you could swim with it, you could do all kinds of things with it. It would synchronize to your phone or your mobile device. I believe it's a Bluetooth enabled thing as well. So very clever kinds of stuff. And the ways that people interact with these devices to make use of them, I'm expecting is really going to challenge our concept of user interface in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And I think in good ways, and that these same sort of user interface, you know, challenges that we have from games and gaming are the same kind of challenges and new innovations that I am expecting to see in a lot of the wearables, because you got to think about how they're going to be used, how a person takes advantage of the functionality that this new wearable device provides, and then how that it can connect in. And now we're back to, you know, buzzword bingo here again. So for those of you who had Internet of Things, you can now close off that row on your card. How they all come together in a fashion that is user-centric, right? That the person is at the middle of the Internet of Things, and the Internet of Things communicates with one another to help the person accomplish what the person wants to do.
Right, right, right. Very cool. I'll look a little bit more of the Misfits. It sounds like that one's been around for a little over a year now. And not too pricey when you consider they've got a package deal with everything all in one for $169. And you start thinking about, you know, the Y Things and the Fitbit and the Jawbone Up, they're all around round number $100, but you want to probably add a couple of additional things to them. That's fairly competitive. Interesting.
Yeah. And I like my Up, you know, I really do. And I got one for my wife too. So, she's been enjoying it so far because it does help with quantified self sort of thing. All right. There's another buzzword for you guys. Yes. Maybe the diagonal is now done. And, unfortunately my Up is, sitting right here with me, tap, tap, tap. And it's not functional at the moment because it was the prior version. And the new one is at my home in North Carolina waiting for me to swap it out. It was under warranty, so I was able to swap it. Unfortunately, it's the second one that was under warranty, and now warranty is done. So,
Boomar. Well, I know we've
covered the waterfront.
An interesting set of thoughts tied into gaming. But you know, we did post a thing that we want to hear back from you on our Facebook page at facebook.com/gamesatwork. I believe it's underscore biz. If not, just look up on Facebook, look up gamesatwork.biz. And really, how do you engage your friends and your family in gaming, and what type of games are you playing right now? We'd like to hear from you, and maybe we figure out, you know, how some of those can actually apply to a work environment or just for fun. I mean, games have still got to be fun when all is said and done, right?
And you know, I'll kick off an idea on that maybe will spur some thinking. I recently downloaded the Lego, which I love, Lord of the Rings, which I love, game for the iPad.
Yes.
And not surprisingly,
do you love it?
I love it.
You love it.
And it came to me, you know, just yesterday, I think. It's like, well, why do I love this so much? Well, the reason why I love it is I love the story. And I love the fact that I am going through the story in an experiential manner, and the game is adding a new dimension of fun and understanding to a story I know and love already, and doing it with characters that I know and love, and doing it in ways that are reminiscent of the movies. Yep. As well as the book.
Very cool.
And what I'm doing with it too, by the way, is I'm encouraging my children to
read
their journey in reading the book. So they're going through the Fellowship of the Ring right now. And I'm telling them, it's like, look, yeah, that would be great for you to look over my shoulder while I'm playing the game, but you haven't gotten that far in the book yet. So you can't watch.
Right. So you can't see when Gandalf takes his staff on the bridge and slams it down and bricks fly everywhere.
And tells Balrog that none shall pass.
None shall pass and build a rocket ship from these bricks.
Yeah, there's not a rocket ship there, but you know, it's entertaining in a really neat way that is taking us in the direction of the melding of entertainment, of learning, of games. I think we're going to see a number of the same things that we've been reading about in science fiction coming to life, where, you know, we may play a game in which we are actors in a game for somebody else's entertainment and gameplay. You know, these are things that can, will come, and there are certainly business implications as to how you might be able to use this to project yourself over longer distances, work as a team, and generate success for all concerned in a new and different way.
Very cool.
I love it. So use that maybe as an idea to help spur some of your thinking about what are you playing? Why do you love it? Think about how it helps you engage with others and how you are able to accomplish more because of the game, or maybe it's just fun to play and that's worth sharing too.
Yes. Well, I think we're out of time for today. Value your feedback, and hey, I've got an idea. We would really like to get your feedback, and if you subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, if you could go in and rate our podcast and maybe provide a review, we would really appreciate that. It helps us out. It'll get us a little bit more exposure and also help you out, because with more exposure to the podcast, we'll get more ideas and more things to talk about to kind of broaden all of our horizons as we all play games at work.
That would be great. We'd love that. Thank you for those of you who are listening, and we're looking forward to playing games with you.
Bye.
Yeah.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.